Well, welcome back to the latest episode of Good Business, the show where we get to talk to amazing visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders around the world. And today is no different. Today we have Jody Grunden, the co-founder of Summit CPA Group. They have been really a game changer in the virtual CFO world. And Jody specifically has been speaking life into so many different topics, ranging from how to take your company remote to how to maximize profits, minimize your taxes, and increase your cash flow. And today we're going to actually be talking about how to position yourself as a thought leader, how he did it, why he did it, and what that resulted. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of Good Business. Well, I'm your host, Clay Vaughn, and I'm best known as the CEO of Good Agency, a full-service marketing agency that helps you market your business and share your story. Now, before we get into this week's episode, I want to give a quick shout out to our show sponsor, Rocket Fuel CRM. If you want access to all the features of email and text message automation, pipeline management, and everything in between, then visit www.rocketfuel.software to learn more. All right, let's dive into this week's episode of Good Business. Guys, we're talking about thought leadership. Jody is going to, I'm going to let Jody introduce himself and give his background, but you guys are not going to want to miss this just because he is a poster child of what to do to scale your business. And I am excited as we're partnering with Jody's company. And so anyway, Jody, take it away. What's your story? Sure. What's your background?
My story. Wow. So basically, I was a misfit accountant is kind of my story. I tried the public accounting route and didn't like it. It was just too much work. And I say work, we're working like 80 hours a week during tax season. Everybody knows what a public accountant does, right? They're doing taxes and man, it's a zoo. And it was one of those things I just didn't really want to create a family with that type of environment. So I thought, hey, let's go to the corporate side and I'm going to really love it there. And when I got there, it was boring. It was like Groundhog Day. So it was one of those things that I liked the excitement that public accounting offered, but I didn't like the hours that we had to put into it. But then I went into what I thought was going to be the perfect scenario. And it was like over and over and over repetitive. And so I thought, hey, what do I do now? I'm kind of like out of it. You know, what do? I just got a college degree. You know what, you know, it's not working out. And I thought, you know what, the entrepreneur in me kind of thought, hey, let's start our own thing and do it a little differently. And that's when I started Summit back in 2002. The idea was that, hey, I'm going to raise my family. I'm going to work 40 hours, 50 hours a week, you know, in that ballpark. I'm okay with putting the time in, not a problem. I just didn't want to kill myself in the process and putting the time. I wanted to be a good father. And so, you know, with that, my kids were growing up. They're playing hockey and I'm like, you know, I want to coach them. And so again, if you know anything about taxes, it's during the hockey season. So I was like, well, how am I going to do this? And so I had to kind of figure all this stuff out and create something that I could actually earn a living. And with that, you know, I thought, hey, let's just change the way that people think about accounting in general and kind of take away that mold. Let's try something completely different. So let's not work, you know, those hours. Let's figure a way that we can accomplish the same thing without having to do that. And so that's when we started developing or kind of building this virtual CFO concept back in 2004. And with that, you know, we thought, hey, let's meet with clients on a regular basis. At that point, it was monthly. And let's kind of work through it and see if we can figure this out. And at that time, the concept was pretty new. There wasn't a whole lot of folks out there trying to provide this type of a service level. And when I say virtual CFO, I mean, hey, we're going to help strategize. We're going to be behind there, help forecasting, KPIs, and really kind of help cash flow and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't really talking about paying bills and doing stuff like that. I was talking about, hey, let's truly be that higher level person that these small business owners couldn't afford. And, you know, it worked out pretty well. It was slow going at first. We're trying to figure it out. And then we thought, you know, hey, let's focus all of our time into there. So we had to kind of shift our model a little bit. And so with our model, usually accounting firms will invoice people, you know, they'll do their time invoice and get the bill and be the bank type of thing. We thought, hey, we can't afford to do this. Cause we're like, you know, we're in this type of, you know, we're on this new process here. And so we thought, hey, let's create the subscription-based billing model where we can just simply zap their bank account every month at that time and, you know, provide this level of service, and something that was not done before. It was something brand new. And we thought, hey, let's try it and see if people really like it. We found that they did. And so it was like, wow, this is kind of nice, because now we're in a cash flow meeting talking with the client, and maybe they're in a situation and our bill never came up as an option because, you know, it was an automatic thing. And so it was nice for us. And then the client would feel they didn't feel weird coming to the meetings because they were behind on payments or whatever. We didn't want that kind of, you know, that relationship. We wanted to be that relationship to help clients out. And so we really kind of focused on that, you know, focus on changing again the way we did it. So not billing by the hour. You know, we wanted to do the subscription-based billing, but then we had to figure out how do we actually market the service. And with that, thought leadership was really and I didn't even know the term at the time, but that's really what we did. We blitz content marketing. We actually have been blogging daily since probably 2005, 2006. Wow. And so last 15 years, literally content going out every single day. And to the wow. point where, you know, we thought, you know, hey, this is kind of different, because the internet back then, if everybody remembers, wasn't really there for the most part. You know, we didn't know what to use it or how to use it.
You were building it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, because it was kind of cool, because you type in virtual CFO and we were the only one on the page. So it was kind of like, oh, this is kind of neat. But that also meant back then, it still probably means now, that nobody looks for it because it's a term that wasn't really used. And so with that, we thought, hey, let's figure out how we can actually make this a popular name. And now if you look on really any accounting website, you're probably going to see virtual CFO in some way. Now, we didn't coin that name. You know, we just simply, you know, it just happened to be that's the name that we picked at the time. And we really, really kind of blew it up to make it big. But content marketing was huge. And what that allowed us to do is allowed us to really grow from a bootstrap company to in 2020, you know, last year we did about, we'll do about $14, $15 million in revenue, you know, this year, all 100% subscription-based reoccurring. And, you know, really with no AR, it's kind of nice, you know, having $14, $15 million company with no AR. And we double our size every 3 years. And so the concept really has worked well. But, you know, there's only part of that story I didn't tell you. The other part is, you know, when we were at the vertical, we were talking about the service-based vertical, right, Clay? And what happened was is we decided, hey, let's focus on a specific industry. And when we did that, which was the creative agency, web design, web development agencies, then we really saw the traction go way high. So we did two niches. We niched into a service, and then we niched into an industry. And the combination of both, you know, went from, you know, like I said, 4 to 5, maybe 8 clients a year before to, you know, we average right now almost 4 to 6 new clients every month. And all those clients are coming to us. We're not out, you know, sending email blitzes and stuff like that. They're all coming to us because of the thought leadership really drives that business success. And without thought leadership, you know, we would be, you know, the growth wouldn't be there. We'd probably still be within that 4, you know, new clients a month, probably, you know, maybe $1 million in revenue and wondering how to get, you know, that next step. Whereas right now it's, you know, how do we actually, you know, bring on the right resources to be able to service clients? Those are the different issues that we're looking at now versus bringing on clients.
Well, that's an incredible story and testimony of what it means when you truly think outside the box and find a blue ocean to take advantage of. So a question I would have for you, I mean, you said 15 years. You've seen a lot happen over the past 15 years. I think I started my business in 2008. So, I mean, right around the same time you started yours. I wish I could say that I was doing as much revenue as you. Granted, I did branch out, and I have 8 or 9 different companies now. So, that said, though, with what you've seen over the years, as you've kind of taken the charge of thought leadership and content creation, obviously you caught a wave. And I love that you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. I think every time I've met you, you're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. It's kind of your look, because you're catching all these waves. It's fantastic. But what would you say if you could just kind of restart, if you were to start your business today, what would be that wave that you see now that maybe someone might be needing to take advantage of? I mean, we have all of these new innovations and artificial intelligence. And I mean, there's so much going on right now. What is that wave that you would recommend people try to catch as it relates to thought leadership?
Yeah, that's a great question. One to kind of think about a little bit.
It's
here.
The magic pill. I'm asking you the one question everybody's asking.
The magic pill, the thought leadership, if you really want to know what that is, it's just being transparent, being 100% transparent with everything you do. You know, when we, you know, whether it's AI or whatever the vertical or whatever you want to hop into, the key is sharing information. You know, we have never, ever said no to anybody when asked, you know, hey, how do you do that? You know, as a matter of fact, we go on tours. You know, I'm speaking at events, you know, probably 6 events a year with all these accounting firms, showing them how to provide CFO services to clients the right way. You know, and with that completely open book, here's how we do our pricing. Here's how we do our onboarding. Here's how we work with clients. Here's the meeting cadences we use. Here's what we talk about, you know, and I'm super open book with that. And I think that's one of the biggest things, because, you know, that's what a thought leader does. Thought leaders educate. And if you don't educate, then you're really just a salesperson, you know, and you don't want to be that. And so even the events that we go to, you know, we don't typically talk, you know, I don't pan out business cards. I don't even own business cards, to be honest with you. I don't corner people on the side and say, hey, I think you should do this or that. It's none of that. It's really just kind of helping people out. And so, you know, I think, you know, Clay, you know, when we hung out, you know, not once did I ever bring up that kind of stuff. You know, it's more like, hey, what's the industry looking like? And I'm like, hey, here's what I'm thinking you should do. Here's the different metrics you need to look at. Here are all the different things. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make you successful without having you hired me. And that's the key. If I can have you be 100% successful without hiring me, then I did my job. High five. And that's what I want. Now, not everybody can do that. Not everybody has that or even wants to do that. Maybe that person might then hire me down the road or whatever. But the idea is that, hey, I want to, you know, help people out. You know, there are several folks, you know, because we typically don't pick up clients under $1 million. It's, you know, $1 million is kind of our minimum threshold. There were several folks at a conference that they hung out with for a long time, just kind of helping them out at $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, knowing that they'd never be a client, or maybe they would be in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, but definitely not now. But it was like, that's the fun part, just helping them out. And so I think if you want to become a true thought leader, you've got to have that in mind. You've got to be able to open the book, allow people to see inside, good and bad, you know, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is. But you know, that's the big key. And then just throw that content out there, really trying to, you know, to help it out. You know, throw the secret sauce out there. Let, you know, don't be afraid to share it with your competitors. You know, there's a, you know, like I said, blue ocean. You mentioned there's a huge ocean out there. You're competing. You know, there's enough clients out there. You're not going to run into your competition.
That's fantastic. So you leverage thought leadership and have continued to leverage that as your avenue for new sales. I mean, for just this growth, that rapid growth.
Yep.
How did you actually make that happen? I mean, I can only imagine what it would feel like to be. I think you mentioned 4 to 10 new clients a year, and you ended up with 10 to 15 new clients a month. Pretty much overnight. So how did you handle that? I mean, I can only imagine the operational component of that change.
Yeah, the operational thing was off. Yeah, it was because at that point, there was just a few of, you know, we were only maybe an 18-person company, and we're maybe doing, you know, maybe $2 million in revenue. So we before we actually got into that thought leadership with the niching, it was pretty comfortable growth. You know, I hire one person a year, and I lose a half a person a year, you know, that type of thing. And it was just kind of a slow go type of thing. But when we picked that up, it was kind of ironic because at the same time, we had our very first truly virtual client, which was a web design, web development company out of Rhode Island called Lullabot. And they were a 60-person, fully distributed company, meaning that they'd never had a location. You know, they worked 100% remote. We picked them up and we thought, you know, hey, this is kind of a cool, I like, you know, first of all, I like the you know, the working with those folks. They're awesome to work with. We still work with them today. And you know, I just connected, right? It was one of those things I could easily talk to. You know, I felt me. It felt like that was the right thing for me. And so I think with thought leadership, that's important, that if you know, you have to really gel with the folks that you're trying to help out. You know, if it's, you know, if you don't feel comfortable around doctors, well, then doctors definitely isn't going to be a thought leadership area that you're going to want to go towards, or dentist or whatever that might be. You know, if it's truck drivers, great. Maybe that's the thought leadership that you want to, you know, kind of focus on. But whatever that is, you got to feel that comfortable, you know, feeling with. But with the, getting kind of back to fully remote company, you know, I was like, hey, you know, I thought this is kind of cool. I think we could do this as a company. You know, here I am. I'm trying to, you know, change the way that people think about accounting, do all these different things. I thought, hey, what better yet than not have an office? And I'm telling you, when I approached the team about this, now keep in mind, we're working remotely with clients anyways, right? They're all over the United States and we're working with them. And I told the team, hey, we're going to go fully remote. We're going to get rid of the office. And we always start the meetings off with a joke. And I didn't start them with a joke, but they thought it was a joke. And they're like, it was like a drop. You're like, what are you talking about? We can't go remote. There's no way. You know, we need to shake hands with people. We need to collaborate. You know, all the kind of stuff that you hear or that you heard pre-COVID, you know, I heard right then. It was like, so what do I do? Do I do this remote thing and lose my entire office? I couldn't take that risk. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to make this building that I own the coolest building in the world. I'm going to put, you know, really cool TVs and make big areas. You know, I'm going to make it so that people really love coming to it. And I'm going to allow it to be as big to grow to maybe 30 people, because someday we'll get 30 people. That was my thinking, right? And so I did that. I kicked everybody out of the office for about 6 weeks. I had them demolish all the walls, and they just really went to town on this thing. I spent over $100,000. You know, to actually do this remodeling. And back then that was a lot of money. Still is a lot of money. But you know, with that, it was kind of funny because the construction took longer than expected. And one by one, people are like, you know what? Kind of like working remote. Do you mind if I work from home? I'm like, no, that's fine. But you know, after about the 15th person that came to me and asked me that, I'm like, okay, what's going on here? So when I opened the office, I didn't even get my sign up, because it was like, why do I even want to put a sign up here? I only got three people coming back to this office.
Yeah.
Everybody else wanted to work remote. And so that was kind of the cool thing, as I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this remote thing. So I said, you know, fine, we're going to hire outside of Indiana from here on out. And we did that. We started hiring good folks all across the United States, but that was tough too, because it was like, well, how do we find them? And at the same time, if Forbes magazine had written an article on one of the first 125 companies to ever go remote back in, I don't know, 14 or 15. And all of a sudden my inbox just kind of blew up with resumes. It was like resume after resume. I was getting a resume every about 3 seconds. It was like bing, 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 bing. I thought I was getting spammed. You know, I'm like, what's going on here? How do you turn this thing off? I can't get these things from quit hitting my inbox. And it was all these folks that, you know, like, hey, I like this remote idea. Let's do it. And which made it tough, because how do you go through 3,000 resumes to find a candidate? It's not possible, right? And so, you know, so with that, we had to come up with, you know, processes to be able to qualify people and all that kind of stuff. But because we did that, and because we went remote at that time, we were able to actually, you know, basically, you know, really recruit really solid people in order to be able to manage the new clients. And luckily the new clients, you know, died down. It was 11 in the first month, and 7, then 6. And then it kind of like sporadically went through. It was because we went to about 4 different conferences in which we spoke at and with those folks. And it wasn't until like the 4th conference over a period of about 9 months that we actually started seeing clients, you know, reach out to us. And it was just luckily on this remote thing that, hey, it worked out that, you know, we were able to hire people to service those clients. But it was all due to you know, basically, you know, giving that opportunity and, you know, working remote vertical, you know, in that vertical niching, you know, having the confidence that, you know, even though we're going to these conferences and not getting the results right away, you know, the results will come, was the idea. And I think a lot of people quit too soon, right? I mean, they'll go to 3 or 4 and they'll go to 1 or 2 and like, hey, this isn't going to work out. No one's going to call us or whatever. And in reality, it's the repetition that you thought leader takes a little time. You can't be a thought leader overnight.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And so, I mean, that seems like that season was a very pivotal moment in your career. And it put you on a trajectory, and you kind of had to stick with that trajectory. I'm sure that there was a temptation throughout the 10 to 15 years. I'm not sure how long that season was, where it was like, oh, maybe we should shiny objects. Let's go over here. I mean, I'm sure everyone deals with that. Yep. That's just kind of a personal hope that everyone deals with that, because I definitely do. But with all of that said, what would you say is kind of the biggest lesson learned through that journey? And and what would you have done differently?
Yeah, the journey was, it wasn't roses all the time, right? It was tough. You know, it was like one issue. How do you work with a remote team now? You know, all these different things that, you know, we're like, we're trying to figure out how to work with a remote team. We're trying to figure out how to keep culture high. And our culture has been, you know, if you rank us in culture, we're always in the top, you know, 10-15% of all service-based companies. So culture is super high. Retention rate is high. You know, so, you know, we had to figure out how to work that. But we also had to figure out how to put the processes in place to be able to scale, because otherwise everything would be snowflaky. And we wanted the experience to be the same, that, you know, for every CFO that we hire, for every client that we hire, getting a similar experience. Again, 80% of that's going to be similar. 20% is going to be personality and, you know, a little diversion there type of thing. But, you know, we want it to be a pretty consistent product. And, you know, it's never perfect. You know, your service line is never going to be perfect there. And you've got to accept that as an owner, that, hey, you know, we're going to give them the best product and service that we can get, knowing that, you know, it's going to take a little time for folks to really grow into the roles and the clients to really kind of mature. Because, you know, when you hire us, it's not like day one, we flip the switch, and day two, everything's solved. You know, the world's problems come to an end. So we have to kind of work through all that. And so how do we keep clients then? You know, how do we get good feedback from them? So we send, you know, 5-star ratings to them every single month. You know, hey, how's it going? Rate us 1 to 5. And we get about 30% return on that, which is pretty solid on that. At least I think it is. And then we do the NPS scores to rank clients. So the whole process, we're trying to figure out how to make sure that we do everything right. And it all comes down to people, processes, and tools, right? You got to have the right people in there. You got to have the right processes. And then you have to have the tools to be able to make everything happen. And if you're doing that, you know, then that's when scale can happen. And it took a while to actually figure that out in order to, you know, to grow the rate we were growing. So we started in 2002, opened up CFO services in 2004, you know, became, you know, fully remote in 2013, 2014. And with that, have grown from probably 2010 on, have doubled our size every 3 years. And so we've really hit that growth pattern. And everybody says, oh, as you get bigger, it's going to be harder for you to double your size. Well, we haven't seen that yet. You know, we're already about 50% greater than we were last year. And we're only a third of the way through the season. So, you know, growth can definitely happen. And if you have that right marketing tool in place, thought leadership, you know, all that, you know, can really kind of, you know, just kind of make it even better.
That's amazing. So obviously we know that we can't do it alone. You have a business partner that I'm sure it's been a journey, but it's been for the best. So who would you say has kind of been that person or that catalyst for your success, that's been there to mentor you and guide you along the way? And how did you find that person?
Yeah, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. One of the biggest things that we have, that we kind of figured out was that you can't do it by yourself. And, and as business leaders, it's tough because, you know, even your partner, as great as Adam is, it's like, there's certain things I can tell him and certain things I can't, because I don't want them taking it the wrong way and going the wrong direction. And the same thing with your team. You know, you feel like, hey, you're kind of out, you can't really tell your team, hey, I don't have any cash, you know, or hey, cash is low. You can't do that. Or, you know, that's not a good healthy thing. And so when we hired, about 6 years ago, we hired a company called Navigate the Journey. They came out and they're business coaches, and they've been meeting with us, me pretty much every single week, week after week. And the nice thing about it was it allowed me to actually, you know, confide into a coach and talk to the coach and tell them my worries, my stresses, my fears, and then kind of get good feedback on how to handle different situations. And it really wasn't until I did that a lot of the anxiety, I guess, kind of slowed down. I'm really good with working under pressure. Pressure is not a big thing. I really like pressure. But you know, there's pressure can be so big, right? You know, and so with that, it just really kind of allowed me to kind of level set. And so I would say hiring a coach is the one of the biggest things that we've done. And you know, with that, and it's not just the coach for myself, but we've hired the coach so that all of our team members have that same experience. So, we have a coach meeting with each one of our CFOs at least once a month, going through the same thing. You know, how to handle client situations. You know, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? So these aren't technical coaches. These are, you know, more people ops coaches. And so with that, that's been a huge, huge success for our team. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I think everybody should have a coach, whether you're brick and mortar or not. But when you're fully remote like we are, that's an important part. Just having that person that you can kind of share your thoughts with without knowing that it's not going to get back to anybody else. You know, they're kind of quiet thoughts there that will allow you to really kind of, improve on your actions and so forth. And so hiring coaches, was a real big part of that.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So tying in all of this into that origin story of leveraging thought leadership to really scale this $15 million business, what would you say in light of the future for all of our audience today? I mean, you've got this knowledge, you've got this experience. You started around the recession in 2008, right? So how would you advise people to prepare for the future? If they're small businesses, large businesses, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so the future. So the biggest thing that allowed us to do a lot of what we did is having cash available. And so, you know, if you don't have cash right now, I think the idea is you got to figure out how to get there. And how much cash should you have? You know, we tell everybody it's 10% of your annualized revenue is the bare minimum. So if you're a service-based company and you've got your $6 million company, you should have at least $600,000 sitting in the bank to use for normal cash flow. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's all sitting there not earning money. Move some of it over to a interest-bearing account so you're making some money on that money. But make sure it's super liquid so you can get to it. And with that, that's going to allow you to make decisions, I would say very informed decisions. And so once you've got your cash and you've built a solid forecast and you know exactly the direction you're going, you know, there's really not an economic condition that's going to really kind of, you know, necessarily put you out of business, unless it's like a COVID situation where we shut down. Hopefully that never happens again where we're shut down. But even the folks that went through that, having that cash reserve there allowed them to make time to make, you know, those good decisions. You know, do we lay people off? Do we, you know, furlough people? What do we do? Do we cut back on expenses? You know, all the different things, it gave them time to make that decision. Whereas when we don't have cash, a lot of times we make emotional decisions. And those emotional decisions can be good, but more than likely, they'll probably be the wrong decision. And we don't want that wrong decision affecting not only your life as a business owner, but the life of all your team members and their families. Because there's a lot of stewardship that you've got there as a business owner that when you think through it, and having that cash is the one that protects that, you know, that asset you have, that, you know, the asset being the people in your company.
Brilliant. That's, I mean, just from my own experience, that's absolutely true. I mean, the moments that we were cash poor is the moment I regret making some of the decisions that I did. And it's only by God's grace that we're still here. And so I completely understand and agree with that. So with all that being said, I mean, thought leadership, making sure that you're carving out your niche, and then obviously on the execution side, making sure that you're not just sticking to the status quo. I mean, you broke outside of the norm and said, "Hey, look, we're going virtual," and this was before Zoom stock was exorbitantly priced. I mean, that was a very early adopter move. Yeah. So. Man, I just need to see what you're investing in these days because you're such an early adopter and you seem to have kind of got that Midas touch, man. But with that said, with our audience today, what would you leave with them with? And what's kind of your like, hey, this is if you're a small to medium sized business, what would you encourage them to do right now?
Yeah, I mean, with me stepping outside of the box was the biggest thing for me. You know, I was kind of trapped into a world where, you know, what do I do? Do I do the status quo? Because if I was a status quo, I would run a very successful accounting firm. I'd probably have two or three employees. I would probably wouldn't have a family because I'm working my butt off all throughout the year, making good money doing it, of course. But in the same point, you know, what's important to me? And so, you know, I think maybe, kind of thinking through it, maybe reverse engineering. What do I want out of life? You know, do I want money? Do I want family? Do I want all of the above? You know, what do I want? And then kind of backing in, okay, so how do I get it based on where I'm at? And do I have to make a change to do that? Do I need to, if I'm an entrepreneur and I've got a small business, do I need to keep doing that? Or do I need to restructure it now to be able to get to the life that I want it to be? You know, because, you know, don't think you're trapped in your business, because you definitely aren't. You've got control over that. You've got to figure out what you want out of your business and how that business is going to be that tool to get you to where you want in life. And I think that's the big key, instead of a reverse role, you know, where a lot of people think I'm trapped. Here's what my business allows me to do. It's like, no, you've got control. You figure out what you want and then make your business a tool to get you there.
Love it. Love it. Jody, thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been amazing. How can people engage with you?
Yeah, like I said, I'm very transparent. Feel free to reach out to me through either LinkedIn or email. Email is Jody, J-O-D-Y, at summitcpa.net. I didn't want to buy the .com thing, so I went with that. That's why I went with .net. So Jody at summitcpa.net. Feel free to reach me out there. We recently merged with Anders CPA Firms Advisors about a year ago. So in reaching out there, you'll probably see that if you hop on the website, talks a little bit about that. So don't, you came to the right place, I guess, if you check that out. I'd be happy to hop on a call with you at any time or schedule a meeting. Obviously nothing outside of that other than just to help you out.
Love it. Love it. And he's not lying, guys. I mean, Jody sat down with me for almost an hour, after we hung out at the conference I walked away with so much knowledge and understanding of kind of what we need to do as an agency and, making sure that we're headed in the right direction and have the right, financial support team. So with that said, Jody, thank you so much for being on the show today. And, I know that our audience has got a ton of value out of this. And yeah, thanks, so guys, definitely go visit his website, summitcpa.net. He is definitely the one that you want to talk to, anyone on his team about, making sure that you are financially ready for the future and that you're ready to grow your business and achieve your growth goals. So guys, we'll see y'all next week on Good Business. If you like this podcast, please subscribe now and share with friends, family, and other business leaders. You can learn more about each guest and the resources we discuss at podcast.clayvon.com. And if you're a business leader looking to market your business and share your story, check out Good Agency at www.goodagency.com. We'll see you next week on Good Business.